Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related.
Good evening, Andy. Friday again.
It is indeed. Good evening, Rowan. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Very well. It's been a big week in the world of .NET.
Absolutely. It's been a very big week. Yeah, lots of things going on, lots of news to catch up on, and lots of things to watch and learn about.
Yeah, exactly. So when are we recording this? We're recording this on the 12th of November, and this week the big .NET Conf has been on. I think it started on the 8th. You know, the 8th was Monday, wasn't it? So the conference has been running all week. And we've had the release of .NET 6, C# 10, F# 6, Visual Studio 2022. It's been a big week in the world of .NET, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. You don't get many weeks like this. Obviously, a massive release for them, launching a brand new IDE, and obviously lots and lots of things coming in .NET 6, C# 10, F# 6, all of it. Yeah, so huge release for them, really. Plus, the fact, of course, on top of this, they're just casually releasing Windows 11 at the moment as well. So
yeah, why not? Just slot that in there amongst everything else. It's incredible, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, yeah. So we were going to use this to have a chat about everything .NET, really.
Absolutely. Given it's been such a big week for .NET, we've had a number of discussions during the week, haven't we, around why one should use .NET. What are the pros and cons really of making the decision to use .NET?
Absolutely.
And we find ourselves talking about it a lot. I mean, we had a long conversation today, didn't we? This morning, just after our stand-up, we quite often meander into a conversation around around particularly the pros of .NET.
Well, a little bit too easy to do that, yeah. Sometimes, yeah, a bit distracted. I think this week more distracted than most, just sort of seeing things. I think because I mentioned to you, I saw a video that Steve Sarnston had released about Blazor and the things he was doing, and it just blew my mind a little bit. So yeah, I think that's why we got a little bit distracted by that. I had to show you a few bits from that because it was absolutely amazing.
It was incredible, actually. Yeah, it was an incredible demo. And the thing I'm enjoying about a lot of the demos recently is they're more true to life, aren't they? Days gone by, the demos would be particularly sort of sculpted to work on stage, and they'd be hypothetical situations that would be talking through something that doesn't ever really happen in real life. It works great for a demo, and it's and it adds wow factor, but in terms of representing something that's sort of true to life, quite often demos wouldn't do that. But this particular one you're talking about that Steve Sanderson did was quite well structured.
It was.
And I think a lot of people working in development teams would be able to relate to just that context that he set.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a common thing, isn't it? It's that you're absolutely right. I think Steve Sanderson, he's very good at doing that as well. He seems to give you more real world examples. It's not your adventure works and stuff like that. It's a bit more real world, and he makes it quite interesting. So enjoyed that.
Exactly.
Definitely want to go and watch if you can.
Brilliant. Yeah. All right, good. Well, before we get into that, I'd like to hear this week's random fact.
Absolutely.
It's quite an interesting one. So what do you got for us?
Well, yeah, it's Microsoft related because we're doing this .NET based. We were sort of umming and ahhing about what random fact to do. We're trying to find one that's interesting about Microsoft. And I came across a few things about them, but this one I'd never heard of, and it makes some sense. That apparently in 1998, when they were looking at pitching their new games console, apparently because it was obviously a games console and it was based around graphics and everything like that, they had a thing called DirectX. And I think it's still about. I think things are still using it, but it's not as big as it used to be. DirectX was a big thing when it came out, so obviously they had a team dedicated to it. And so they pitched this new console known as the Direct Xbox because it's Direct X and it was a box, so made sense. But of course, it was obviously shortened in the end to Xbox. And it sounded like there's a lot of internal, struggle with what do we call it. They wanted to shorten it to Xbox. The marketing department didn't like it, so they changed it and put it out to some user groups. And it sounds like they put Xbox on the list of short names to appease people.
Yeah.
But of course, the public being as they are, they decided that they liked that name, so they agreed with the developers, and obviously that's history. It's called the Xbox.
It's now called the Xbox.
Very interesting.
It's a good lesson in what happens to names over time, particularly in technology. Now imagine if it was called the Direct Xbox now. Just, you know, it'd be the laughing stock, wouldn't it? You know,
I think they would have changed it a few times. Yeah, absolutely. But exactly. I mean, it sounds like they had lots and lots of ideas on there. I mean, if you know, you can go and Google for all this stuff and sort of see it, but there's a wiki page that goes through some of it. You know, they had things like Windows Entertainment Project, Microsoft Total Gaming, Microsoft Interactive Network Device, MIND. I think they were trying to get really good acronyms for it, or abbreviations. So MIC as well, Microsoft Interactive Center. But yeah, it's obviously Xbox One out, and everybody knows it by that now. So yeah, like you say, it's something that's got to last the test of time as well. I guess it has. I think everybody knows what it is. So yeah.
Exactly, and something like Xbox is going to stand the test of time, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, absolutely. So, anyway, let's move on to the main thing.
Absolutely. So, why use .NET? There are a number of headline points that come to mind when I think about why one should use .NET. Things like the fact that the key languages, you know, C#, F#, even VB.NET, are compiled rather than interpreted like some of the other stacks out there, gives you a level of safety that you just don't get in non-compiled languages. Things like, you know, the coverage and the massive support and the global reach, and the fact that Microsoft's backing you know, .NET are all really important factors, but it might be worth us talking through those key points just to see if we can explore, you know, those headline sort of, you know, those headline points. And so coming back to that first point around safety, C#, F#, VB.NET, they're all compiled languages. So in order to be able to get something to run, the compiler has to be happy, doesn't it? You have to have written code that at least compiles. If you compare that with something like JavaScript or PHP, there's nothing to stop you, you know, saving into a text file and sticking on a web server, and making a web request and you know, having that request fall over. So, you know, that first level of defense, i.e., the compiler, is a big selling point just to begin with.
I've heard terms compile time safety and obviously runtime errors, compile time errors, that sort of thing. Because when you compile it, it's going to let you know then. So that's why the code's right in front of you.
Yeah.
But runtime errors, you're not going to see them until the user probably gets them. You're very unlikely to get them. It's more likely to be the users.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's no step in between you writing some code and then effectively that code being run. So the first time you're going to find out about errors is when it's being run, which is, you know, for an interpreted language, the thing that's the context that's running that code is going to fall over as soon as it tries to, you know, compile that down at runtime. So, or interpret that at runtime. So, you know, that's a massive selling point. And so with the big .NET languages, so C# obviously gives you an object-oriented paradigm to work within. You've obviously got F#, which is a hybrid between object orientation and functional programming, really. You can go full functional if you like in F#, or you can go object-oriented if you so desire, or you can use a mix of the two. But the great thing is that, again, it's a compiled language. It's got a rich type system. So there's a brilliant sort of first line of safety there. And VB.NET is the same as well. So, you know, obviously compiled, that is a really strong selling point in my mind, that, you know, just the fact that these languages are compiled and you need to get your compilation right before you've got some software that's runnable.
Yeah, very, very useful early spot problems.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's that. There's just on that safety aspect, the .NET APIs being so mature and being through, you know, we're at version 6, having gone through so many iterations, security is now a first-class sort of citizen in all of the APIs. If you think about ASP.NET, you've got things like JOT, you know, JWT parsing built in by default into .NET in ASP.NET Core. All of the identity management is, you know, built in by default. Things like anti-request forgery tokens just happen. So there's, you know, security is very much a first-class citizen, and by default you will get it right. So the maturity of the APIs, you know, really make a big difference in terms of providing a secure secure framework to work within. So
which is very important with building websites and things like that, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Particularly with websites, because you're putting something out into the world that you know, virtually anyone can access. So you need to, you know, you really need to be on top of your game in terms of covering off potential security holes, and using .NET or ASP.NET Core, you know, gets you a long way there. Just by, you know, but by default.
Yes, yeah, something you haven't got to think about if somebody else has dealt with it already, and it's less likely to get it wrong.
Exactly.
I always taught that writing your own security was bad idea, because you know there's lots of clever stuff going on behind the scenes that you just don't know about, and you're going to get it wrong.
Exactly. If you roll your own, you're most likely going to get it wrong. So the fact that we're working with .NET gives us a really strong, mature set of secure APIs with best practices built in by default. So you know, those two things alone sort of come under the safety heading for me. Something that the you know, a lot of the other frameworks out there or dev stacks don't necessarily or aren't as strong as .NET. So big selling points for me.
Yeah, generally as well, a lot of these other systems, there's frameworks, but they're not generally built by the same people that build the language. So there's a little bit of a disconnect from it, because obviously with things like PHP, you get frameworks on top of that. Laravel is a popular one that I've heard about, and Node's got similar things. So there are other frameworks built on top, but they come from other people. So they're not always joined up. Obviously, with the Microsoft languages and the Microsoft frameworks, as they move on, these things get updated and they know they work together, so it all joins up and it all works well.
And it's an interesting point, that one, because I think for me that comes under the heading of governance, really, around what changes get made into the framework, who decides what changes you know, get made, how they're designed, you know, what the release sort of cadence and schedule is for the whole framework, how cohesive the whole thing is together. So, yeah, I guess we could touch on that in a little while, but certainly a really important point, isn't it? Because you know, some of the other dev stacks out there are a bit like the Wild West in terms of anyone can jump in and, you know, release a package out to production, which can bring down a significant part of the internet.
Yeah, as we've seen happen before with some things, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay, cool. Any other security things or anything like that you want to touch on? Or
There's obviously things like assembly signing, you know, a built-in to allow you to create, you know, strongly named assemblies. Again, that comes under the safety heading for me. So, and again, that's, you know, by virtue of the fact that we're talking about such a mature service and, you know, stack.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Really important point.
Yeah. Taking that on, you saying it's a mature stack, obviously being mature like that, it's massive, really, isn't it? There's so much to it. You know, .NET as a platform is one thing. Obviously, the languages are a separate thing. You know, you've got the languages that you write it in, but obviously what you can do with it with the various framework coverage. So things like having ASP.NET, new things coming out like Blazor, WASM and Server, Web API, building services or console apps, or having more things like WinForms or WPF, and then sort of more platform-specific things or cross-platform, obviously, because it's, you know, we've mentioned it before in another episode that, you know, it's cross-platform now. It runs on Windows, Linux, and Mac, so you can build these things across all of them, which is great. So you've got all of these massive areas that, you know, generally... I mean, I've been doing web development for the majority of it. I did WinForms for a long time and then did more web stuff. So I haven't seen a great deal of what's been going on in the WinForms world. I sort of skipped WPF a little bit, did a little bit of WinForms, not really touched on the MAUI stuff yet. I've seen a lot more coming in recently. I think that's now sort of been released or reaching a point where it can be released.
Yeah.
So, it looks like that's becoming more popular and integrating more of the cross-platform stuff that used to be Xamarin, type of thing, Xamarin Forms, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's all that happening.
It's such a good point. Such a good selling point. It is just massive, isn't it? So you just covered off there. We've got web coverage. Yeah. We've got platform-specific sort of app development, which is now not platform-specific. You know, with the release of MAUI in the mobile and workstation. Sort of development is all sort of melding under MAUI. Mm-hmm. We've got coverage in the gaming world with Unity. Yeah,
that's a good
point. Database coverage, you know, with EF, mm-hmm. Entity Framework, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, your bigger distributed system sort of coverage with, mm-hmm. you know, the research projects like New Orleans that came out and DAPR, as in DAPR, not the database.
Too confused framework. With that one yet.
Yeah, you've got the whole world of Azure and serverless mm-hmm. and all of the services under there, which all integrate with .NET really, mm-hmm. really nicely.
Yeah.
And then you've got a whole world of, just a whole world of libraries, you know, cross-cutting libraries, you know, like ML.NET and all of the, you know, all the APIs built into the framework. So there's such a massive coverage
huge,
there.
Huge, isn't
it's, and you know, one of the key sort of aims for these later versions of .NET has been to get .NET everywhere. And that's really what's happening, isn't it?
It's funny. Yeah. Years and years ago, that was sort of always seemed to be an aim of Microsoft is, you know, I remember years and years ago, you know, I think Bill Gates' vision was to have a PC in every home. Is it every home or every office?
On every desk or something like that.
That's right. And, you know, that may not have happened. You know, there's a split between obviously the different OSs. So, you know, Macs are very popular, Windows are very popular, you know, but what they have managed to do now, absolutely, they've now got .NET on every platform and it's really easy. It's really easy to use. It's, you know, it can build all of these things. So I think it feels like they are really moving towards that. And like you say, with things like Azure out there, they've taken on sort of the serverless stuff. You've got a platform you can push your stuff to and it's managed. They've made this so easy. It's all integrated. It's all great. And touching on that point you made about gaming with Unity, it was something I never really thought about with sort of developing Windows software. Gaming was something that was done in another language or on a different platform. I know there were different gaming, Unreal gaming engine and stuff like that. You had all that sort of thing. I joined up with a company a while ago and they had a department that built VR games.
Right.
And they were using Unity to build that. So of course it was good because it was a C# house already. And they had people that knew C# and obviously Unity uses C# under the hood to allow you to build these games out. So it's a good entry point into the gaming world as well. It's sort of Unity, obviously it's a different product, but it uses C# under the hood. But you know, it's such an easy way to get into the gaming world if you know C# and you know, you've got both paths then. You can go business or gaming. It's quite a big thing to get into.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, and that's
a lot of people like it.
Absolutely, and that's a whole new world, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a completely different world to the world that you and I sort of live in day to day.
But
it is just massive, isn't it? And I think, as you say, the strategy has changed from being sort of a Windows PC on every desk, back in the day, to now being, get .NET running everywhere on whatever platform makes you happy. Mm-hmm. On whatever, you know, whatever machine makes you happy, whether that be a cloud machine or, you know, an on-premise server because, you know, your company, you know, forces you to run stuff internally, mm-hmm. or whether that be Linux or Windows or Mac, it's really heading in a nice direction, isn't it?
It really is. It's great that you're not forced anymore that, you know, you might be a developer who likes using a Mac. And that doesn't matter anymore. You can use a Mac. You can build code. Everything connects together. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's irrelevant what you're building it on. It's great. It's really good. So, and it's all, you know, it's been, like you say, it's been out there for a long time. It's all good to go. It's production ready. There's been systems out there using it for a long, long time. It's performant.
I
think it's getting better and better. Every release seems to be getting faster. And even though they add features, but everything still performs faster. They're getting more out of it, and you know, people can use it for anything. So
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean, for me, that's another one of those really high level bullet points that is important, is the fact that it's super performant and it's obviously production ready. Mm-hmm. And I think with the release of Core, that's when the real performance gains, started to hit really. Yeah. Once they'd sort of, decoupled from system.web, in mm-hmm. the ASP.NET world, and, once they sort of broke it all down and built it all back up again, that's when we've seen the real performance gains. And I recall hearing Scott Hunter talking about the fact that they're aiming for the .NET framework to be the fastest framework in the world. Mm-hmm. I think with the release of .NET 5, ASP.NET Core, the ASP.NET 5 overtook Node in terms of performance. And yeah. with the recent release of 6, that has improved even on what it was with 5. So it's just, the framework is incredibly performant, and it's brilliant. And you mentioned recently something you were reading about Raygun.
I was going to say.
From Node to .NET Core.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to say, you're mentioning about it being faster than Node. And obviously, with these sorts of things, obviously, companies then start putting that to the test and trying it out. And, something I was reading about Raygun, a case study on their website, basically was from 2020 when they started looking at moving to .NET Core and moving everything across from Node. And they actually found that they could get a 20-fold or a 2,000% increase, which is absolutely phenomenal.
2,000%.
Let me just read that again. That is a 2 with 3 zeros, a 2,000% increase in speed, going from 1,000 requests per second to 20,000 per second just by changing frameworks. Which
so with Node they are achieving 1,000 requests 1, per second.
That's right.
They moved to .NET Core 1.0, and they immediately saw 20,000 requests per second.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. So it's literally just by changing frameworks. And of course, that's not a commercial product where, they're getting more bang for their buck because, it's had a lot of engineering and that done it. This is just out of the box. This is just what .NET Core does.
Yeah.
And then they've updated that article a few times and said when they move from Core 1 to 2, they got another 25% increase for free. It's not costing them anything.
Yeah.
And again, they've moved from 2.1 to 3.1 and they've got another 12% increase. So, I can't see that going backwards. So I've not found one yet for the next publish of sort of 3.1 up to 5 and 6, but I'm sure as 6 is saying it's quicker again.
Yeah,
there's absolutely no reason why they wouldn't do it. Getting the new features, getting the performance increases, it's a no-brainer really that you would do it. So
it's one of their key targets with the .NET framework is to make it the most performant framework in the world. So it's brilliant to see that actually coming to fruition.
It's amazing, isn't it? And one other thing they did mention in there, it was a related article, I'll just chuck it in quick, but it was sort of related to .NET. Obviously you get the Kestrel web server, which for years and years has been sort of said, it's not really a production ready web server. It's always something you proxy to, so you'd put it in IIS or you'd have something like Nginx or Apache in front of it, and you'd proxy off to it. So That was what they were doing. But they looked at, somebody queried that with them. I think when they put this story out on Twitter, somebody queried with them and said, why are you still using Nginx? Why haven't you, taken that out and put it straight to Kestrel? And they looked into it and they actually found that, the engineering people in Microsoft said, Kestrel was a lot more mature now. It was actually, it can be used to, straight onto the web, no proxy needed. And again, they did that and they found a 44% increase in transactions per second. So 44%. Increase just by removing Nginx,
removing Nginx as the proxy. So requests were coming straight in and hitting Kestrel.
Absolutely. Wow. So and there's other things they sort of found that it's an interesting read that they found that when they moved Nginx, there was Kestrel was using more memory. But when they looked into it, which normally would be a bad thing because obviously if you're using more memory, that's bad. Obviously, you think Nginx was maybe a bit more optimized and a bit more efficient, but it turns out that actually now Nginx was actually hitting its upper memory limits. It couldn't actually use any more memory because it couldn't deal with any more requests, whereas Kestrel could deal with more requests, so it used more memory, but it never went above sort of a 30% of memory, so it's still quite low utilization for what it's doing. And again, it's just free. They got that for free. What a thing to be able to do. It's like, can we increase the system? Just change the framework off your back. It's great. you know, it's a good reason for trying to get companies to stay up to date with framework versions.
Absolutely.
You're getting it all for free. You know, you might tweak the odd thing, you know, tweak a collection type that you're using to squeeze as much performance out of it, or use structs, or, you know, really low level things. But actually, to be able to just get a 25% increase just by changing the framework, there's no way you're going to tweak your code to do that. It's, you know, it's underlying stuff that really improves it.
Exactly. Oh, that's such a great story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as well as the, you know, the performance factor, as well as the massive framework coverage, as well as that safety point we talked about, the other thing that sort of comes into the story is of course the tooling around a framework. And essentially a developer story. You know, how easy is it for a developer to get up and running and build stuff and maintain stuff and release stuff? And that's, you know, that's another heading where .NET is really strong. There's a brilliant tooling and developer story, really.
There is, absolutely. Yeah, I think, again, this is what Microsoft are good at. You know, they've been releasing products for years. You know, they've got lots of experience with the Office suites, with their various tools, and obviously they've been building Visual Studio for years now. They've had a very long time. Yeah, you know, it came out years and years ago. It's Visual Interdev. It's been Visual Studio for a long time now. You know, I think 2008, 2005, 2002, going back through them, there's been loads of releases, and obviously they've just released the newest one, 2022, which, you know, it looks the same as the old one. It's a little bit different. It's been tweaked. Feels faster, but it works the same. But it's a great IDE. I think people still say it's one of the best dev IDEs in the world, just because of what you can do with it and how quick it is to pick up and use. And, you know, the community edition is free, so there's no price point for entry for people. Just go and get it, start using it. And it, of course, it integrates with everything. Again, being Microsoft, it's already built to integrate with Azure, SQL Server, things like that. So it's just such a quick, easy thing to pick up. And, you know, you can make it as heavy or as light as you want. When you install it, you've got the option to install all the bells and whistles or just the bits you need. You might not be doing, you know, pick the language you need, it supports JavaScript, Python, C#, everything. You can do it all, but, you know, just take the bits you need. So even if you're a Python developer, it's got tools in there for Python developers. It could be used for that. So, you know, it can make their life easier as well.
So a really, as you say, a really mature IDE. I think, but, you know, referring to those earlier versions, I'm thinking back, and it wasn't always a great IDE. It's taken a while for it to get to this point.
It has.
But I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the new features in 2022, like there's, you know, AI code completion and that sort of thing built in. So it really is a great mature IDE, and it's you know, it's what you and I spend all day long in, really, isn't it?
That's the thing. That's why, you know, I suppose, I'm glad it's as good as it is, because I think you'd hate it sitting in there all day long, you know, doing it. And I think something else to say about Visual Studio, I think this is, might be right, wrong here, but this is the first 64-bit release of it. So obviously that makes a huge difference. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, things in the past have been, it can be a little bit slow loading projects, and, you know, a bit slow performing certain things when you've got some extensions. Obviously, the obvious ones, things like ReSharper. But to be honest, even using the preview versions, I found it was quite smooth. It was quite good. So hopefully, being 64-bit, more access to memory, a bit tidier, who knows, we'll see. But also, of course, a few years ago, Microsoft released a Visual Studio Code for free, which was another option for people. If you don't want the sort of like the grown-up version of Visual Studio, you can use Visual Studio Code. But to be honest, it's fantastic, because
it's a standalone developer tool, really, isn't it? It's not tied to the .NET framework. And it's got great sort of support, and it's had great adoption in the development community all over, really, not just with the .NET world, but it's a standalone, stands up on its own two feet IDE, really, and it's super flexible. And I think the whole add-in extension model works incredibly well, doesn't it?
It does. And like you say, I mean, I don't think there's a language it doesn't support. It's not just for the .NET languages, not like C#, F#, VB.NET. It supports all of them. You know, lots of. I split my time. I use Visual Studio most of the time, but I do split my time into using Visual Studio Code for things that are static websites, or you know, editing HTML or a bit of JavaScript or CSS. It's good for that. It's really quick to fire up, quick to use. Yeah. So, and like you say, the extensions, there's some you use all the time. Live Server is a really great one. You just you know, fire it up. You've got a live server that does hot reloading for you, and it just detects changes, reloads the browser. It's great. It's really quick to play about with things and get things up and running. So exactly. Really, really good for that. And again, free. All, you know, that's free.
Free
all
and cross platform as well. Cross-platform. So, you know, you can install it on Linux and Mac. Works really well with Windows Subsystem for Linux, actually, WSL. Yes. Yeah. So you can, you know, you can develop on files that are running on WSL and have a local version of Visual Studio Code installed, and edit the files and run, debug, and it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
I did see Scott Handelman doing some interesting stuff with WSL and Visual Studio Code when it sort of first became easy to do that. He was, I can't remember exactly what he's doing, but I know involved, there was a Raspberry Pi involved as well, and I think he was editing code directly on the Raspberry Pi from his desktop machine.
Wow.
That sort of thing. So it's interesting stuff. But I mean, those sort of tools, you know, you spend your day inside Visual Studio, but obviously you drop out to the command line quite a few things. I know I do, and I think most devs do. So obviously .NET Core introduced the concept of the CLI. Online interface, so you can now do a lot more, you know, .NET build, .NET new, .NET run, .NET test, all of it built in, so all of those sorts of things. And that side of it, there's things like GitHub, Azure DevOps, Azure CLI, NuGet. There's all these things we could mention about the tooling side of it, and it's just it's so rich, there's so much around it that is really well thought out and joins together so well.
It does, doesn't it?
A lot of this stuff is powered by Microsoft. It comes from them. Obviously, they purchased GitHub. Azure DevOps is theirs. NuGet is part of the Microsoft framework. So, but it's not controlled by them. It's open source. No. You know, a lot of this stuff.
And I guess that moves us on to that final heading that we alluded to earlier, and that's around the governance of the framework. And so, you know, we've obviously got Microsoft as the big financial backer for the framework. But in terms of the governance, if I can say it properly, you know, we've got the .NET Foundation. And so that provides a cohesive, structure for all of the design and to work out all the release schedule. But the great thing about that is it pulls in the community. And really the culture in Microsoft generally, I think, has changed over the past, however long it's been, 5-10 years, to really be community driven. And that started with the open sourcing of the framework of .NET. And the whole move towards listening to the community, to the community, opening up the code, has really made for such a brilliant governance model.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I think people buy into it. Then it's you can see what's going on. It's so much more transparent. So you see a lot of things that are happening, which is it's interesting. Yeah, very interesting to see what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and coupled with that, the community around .NET is incredibly passionate, and and there's a strong community. Obviously, there's the big Microsoft cohort with the likes of Scott Hanselman and Scott Hunter and Scott Guthrie. You know, all the Scots there. Yeah. The likes of David Fowler and Damien Edwards, who are very strong in the community. Steve Sanderson, Madge Christensen, people like Troy Hunt from a security point of view.
Yeah.
You got what feels like hundreds of sort of specialist community leads and MVPs who are out there really helping educate and communicating and taking in feedback as well.
Yeah.
So it's such a massive, strong, passionate community. In some ways it's entertainment, just sort of seeing what the latest and greatest sort of, Twitter posts and Channel 9 videos are. I spend a lot of time just keeping up with the the community and seeing what's going on there.
Yeah, I do as well. I follow probably the same people as you do. You know, a lot of these people they're very active on Twitter. They post a lot. They do a lot of videos. So, you know, there's lots of stuff on Channel 9 and the MSDN network about what they're looking at. And obviously recently with everything being launched in the .NET conference, there's loads of videos on there that are recent. So they're showing you a lot of the new features of .NET 6 and C# and F#. So, you know, lots of things to watch. But yeah, they are really active. And, you know, Scott Hanselman, probably the one I followed most, I would think. He was very, very, I think he's probably one of the first ones I remember sort of seeing stand up and do lots of presentations, and he was very, very good at it as well.
Yeah.
So I think they probably learned from that it's really useful to have these people up front and center to actually sell your company. You know, I don't think the suited, booted people in Microsoft would come across as well. They're not as passionate about it. You know, these people live and breathe it. So
exactly.
You know, and it's not just a job to them.
Exactly. And I think, as you say, they're very community minded, like Scott Hanselman is, you know, he's a brilliant presenter, incredible dev, you know, very entertaining, but he's incredibly community minded as well. So it's not just a one way conversation. And I think that's been part of the success of, you know, of late, really, is the fact that, you know, the community is having such an input. It's no longer a framework that's driven by a big corporation. It's driven by a world of developers, really.
It is. I mean, that was shown recently, wasn't it? They did a bit of a U-turn on a decision they made, and that was pretty much driven by the developer community going, we're not happy with that. I think they felt the pressure. And you know, a lot of companies, they wouldn't have sort of changed their mind. It was just like, it's our product, we'll carry on doing what we feel with it. But this thing, they do listen. Microsoft do listen. And you know, a lot of the people we're talking about, the people like Scott Hanselman, David Fowler, you know, they've got, I don't know if they've got sway within Microsoft. Obviously they're within Microsoft and they know what's going on, but I think they can let them know that people aren't happy with this, and there's going to be a lot of bad publicity and feedback from people if they don't make the right decisions, and they hurt the developer community.
Absolutely.
Because people were asking questions, you know, can Microsoft be trusted with open source if they're going to do this sort of thing? And of course, it's the sort of thing that does start getting talked about if people do throw their weight around like a company. You sort of go, well, you know, who's going to control them? And I think it showed really good responsibility from them to actually say, yes, we did that wrong, sorry, we made a mistake, and they went back on it, which was really good. So you know, we're talking about things like, you know, these people, passionate community, but they also, like I did mention about Channel 9, they put these things out there, the MSDN network, there's so much information. Obviously they're a company at the end of the day, they've got marketing, they want to put things out there, but you know, these things are really useful. They seem to take pretty much all their developers and give them a chance to, you know, showcase what they've been working on, what they've built, how we can use it to build things. And you know, it must be great for the developers within the teams to get involved in this sort of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And even beyond Microsoft, you know, the MVP, most valuable profession. Is that what MVP stands for?
MVP, professional valued professionals. Yeah.
Yeah. Even that structure is just a great way to get people talking about and you know, communicating about and teaching and you know, presenting, you know, .NET and everything it's got to offer.
Yeah.
Not to mention the podcasters, of course.
They're you know, credit to them. You know, they do a great job.
They do. Yeah, most of them.
Most of them.
Yeah.
But there are, again, there's loads, you know. I mean, obviously we do ours, and, you know, we do it just for the reason we try and cover everything .NET related and everything we're interested in. But, you know, we do it because we want to, and it's good to have a chat. And, you know, you never know, this might be useful to people, which is what we always thought.
Yeah.
You know, when we were chatting about things, we're like, oh, we should record this, and then other people can listen to it and realize how much we waffle on about rubbish. But, you know,
yeah.
But there are people out there, you know, we've mentioned Scott Hanselman. He's a regular. I listen to his podcast. I think you listen to .NET Rocks, don't you, a lot more?
With Carl Frank and Richard Campbell, absolutely. I mean, I've listened to them for years. Yeah, yeah. Hansel Minutes has been a go-to. Yeah, I mean, when I was commuting, that would be the thing that I'd do, is listen to podcasts. So
it's great, it's a short little intro to things, isn't it? It's a little chance to catch up on things. You get the odd snippet here and there, and it's interesting to hear these people. So, yeah, their take on it and what they're doing. So
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, I think we've covered off a fair few sort of big areas and big reasons why one should go to .NET, really. And, you know, we do sound like a couple of .NET fanboys, but it's
pouring,
for good reason.
The love on .NET we are, aren't we?
Exactly. But it's for good reason. I mean, for me, it is it's the best framework out there, and it's a means to an end, really. It's you know, it allows us to develop good quality software that we can maintain and extend, and you know, and ultimately deliver great value to our users. So it really makes sense.
Yeah. No. So I think you're right. I think we've covered it all. Obviously, there's loads of. I encourage people, if they're listening to this and they want to go and learn about the .NET 6 stuff, there's loads of videos from the .NET conference out there. And I watched one of them with Steve Sanderson. I've got to catch up on the others. I just didn't get time this week to do it. So I think I'm going to have a busy weekend watching, trying to fit videos in at double speed and try and get through it. I think I worked out double speed. There's about 13 hours worth of videos or something like that.
Easily done.
Yeah. I've got to sleep. I'll try not to sleep this weekend. I'll be blurry eyed next week. Maybe we'll talk about a few next week and sort of see, what they had in them. But yeah, no, it's been really good to chat to you about that, and interesting stuff coming out of Microsoft. So looking forward to what they do next.
Absolutely. And I can feel a .NET open source project of the week coming up.
Yeah, I was going to say, easy OS project of the week this week is .NET. Everything .NET related, everything Microsoft's doing in the open source area. You know, you can go and look at this stuff. You can see all the information out there, all the code is there, all the pull requests, all the comments. You can see how they're doing it and what's going on. So yeah, very easy. And likewise, I can probably guess the utility of the week is .NET as well.
It's gonna have to be .NET utility. You know, with the .NET CLI, you can create yourself a utility, install it globally, and call it with .NET and then your commands.
I'd probably say a little bit of a cop out from us this week on the utility in the OS, but do you know what? Just putting it out there that it's not a pre-built utility, but like you say, you can build whatever you want with it. So it's a good chance to actually build your own utility, and you never know, we might feature it here as utility of the week, or you know, build a project in it, make it open source, and it could be on here.
Let us know, and we can talk about it. Absolutely.
That's it. Great.
Well, there you go. That is why .NET U, really. I think we've covered a lot of areas, at the end of the day, it really is a great framework. It's an exciting time to be, to be involved with it, really.
Yeah, it's a great framework. It's fun to work with, and it's nice to have all the community available to us as well. So. Yeah,
absolutely. Good stuff.
Very good stuff.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. And I look forward to our chat next week. Hope you have a great weekend. And, don't get too bleary eyed watching all the .NET Conf videos.
No, hope you have a good one too. And looking forward to speaking to you next week. Cheers, Ryan.
Cheers. Bye, Andy.
Bye.